This is an interview with Mrs. Alberta Stokes and Mrs. Dorothy Campbell at Mrs. Stokes' home in Savannah on August 13, 1992. The interviewer is Barbara Hendry. Tape number CB/012BH.
I was born April 15th, 1910, in Savannah, Georgia, on Powell Street. Mm-hmm. And, what else do you want to know?
And when did you move to the Brownsville area?
We moved out here in the latter part of 1927. And when we first came out this way, it was... It was a beautiful neighborhood, very quiet, friendly, and it was more like a family-oriented place. Everybody looked out for everybody in the neighborhood. So, ask me questions.
Okay, what street did you move to first?
When we first moved out here, we moved to 40th Lane and Florence Street. And we stayed there for a year until the house on 38th Street was ready for us to move into. And we stayed on 38th Street a couple of years. Mm-hmm. And from there, we moved to 2213 Harden Street. And from 2213 Harden Street, we moved to 40th Street and 43, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And I've been there ever since, been here ever since.
So you raised your daughter?
I raised my daughter right in this neighborhood.
Okay. Thinking back to some of the neighbors you've had in these different parts of Brownsville, could you describe some of the neighbors, what they did for a living, what they were like?
Well, earlier it was mostly school teachers in this neighborhood. And I think we had one, I don't remember, but one doctor, no, two doctors in this neighborhood at the time. And, oh yeah, postal workers.
Mm-hmm. And seamstresses.
Yeah, who was a seamstress?
Mama Daisy
seamstress. And I think it was about three ministers out here in the neighborhood at the time that I can remember.
And you describe the neighborhoods like being like a family.
A family. Well, everybody looked out for everybody.
In what ways?
And, well, in what ways it would be like if
everybody
they didn't have a key, but they wouldn't know how to get in. We did have...
Everybody's mama could whip
everybody's child. And at the time, it wasn't many Frigidaires and air conditioners and things like that. We had carpenters. You could call anybody, regardless of what you needed done, plumbing work. You could just stand on the front porch and see one of your neighbors passing by. Do you know that you know? And ask them, could you come in here and help do so and so? And that's just the way it was. And then we did have, I guess Mr. Blilo wouldn't mind being called the Ice Man. through the neighborhood, because he still has some children living on the corner of 41st Street. Everybody used to call him Uncle Rufus. And regardless of what you had to have done, all you had to do is to wait for Uncle Rufus to come through on his truck and call him, and he'll leave the ice truck and come to your rescue. And then Mr. Foy used to be the wood man. He had a wood yard on the corner of 40th and Florence Street. And we all called him Uncle Lemmy.
Uncle
Lemmy. Uh-huh. L-E-M-M-Y. The neighborhood was a real good neighborhood, but now all those folks are gone, and it's all new people. But we still get along around here.
So that was during the 1930s and 40s.
40s and 50s, 60s, up until, up until the latter part of the 60s.
And everyone mostly
knew everyone. Uh-huh.
Had more of this family. Help each
other. That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But other than that, since so much crime, the neighborhood has kind of gone down a little bit, but we still look out for one another. We have a community club, and we meet every other month, and we get together and talk about what's needed in the neighborhood. And we look out for our neighbors. Anybody reported need help, the neighborhood club would get together and make a contribution.
And it sounds like when you were raising your daughter here, you had very few worries about her playing.
Very few. Mm-hmm. Because you would always know where your child is. Because if she's missing from one neighbor's house a couple of days, that neighbor's going to check to find out what happened to so-and-so. I haven't seen her. Or if she's to a neighbor's house or my house, if the child is to my house and she's overstaying her time, you always call and let the parent know where their child is and see that they get home.
Well, thinking back to your childhood in Brownsville, you were mentioning about playing within the neighborhood and so forth. Can you describe that?
Well, when we were allowed to go out, we were told never to go beyond certain limits. I could not go out of Brownsville to play unless it was on special occasions. And at that time, if you went farther than your particular neighborhood, you had to be invited. The parent of the other child would always know, and they would contact your mama and let your mama know that, yes, she's going to be at my house and she'll be there between a certain length of time, and then they put you back on the street and send you back home, and they check to be sure that you got there within that limits. Now, there were no telephones particular in every house, but in at least one house in each block there was a phone so that they could contact anybody, because that was a community phone.
So
whoever had the phone allowed
could come
in and use that telephone. Yes. And that's how parents kept up with their children outside their particular neighborhood. All of our friends were right here in the Brownsville area. We all went to school together. We all went to Sunday school and church together. We all played together. And there was hardly any animosity among us. Each person's house was the other person's house, and every parent had the right to discipline every child. It just did not matter If a child came in my house and got into trouble along with me, that child was punished just like I was. And parents told about it. And 9 times out of 10, you get punished the second time for having been bad in somebody else's house. And by your own parents. And so it was in school with us.
How sad.
If I went to school and misbehaved in school, and a teacher had to punish me, or the principal had to punish me, and that was told to my parents, I got punished when I got home. It was just that way, because we were taught respect for adults. Respect yourself and respect your friends. Treat people as you would have them treat you. And if you didn't, you just got punished for it.
Now, your mother mentioned that a lot of teachers lived in the neighborhood. Did many of your teachers from Florence Street also live nearby?
Yes. Yes, a lot of the teachers at Florence Street School lived between 36 and Victory Drive and Burris to Ogeechee Road. Most of those teachers lived in this area. There were a few from off the east side, but a lot, including the principal, when I was going to Florence Street School, lived on 37th Street. And if I can remember, 4 teachers lived on in the same block. They lived right close together and on 36th Street. Most of our teachers lived in this neighborhood.
And what years did you go to Florence Street?
From 36, 35. I was 5 years old when I went into Florence. I was 5 years old, so in 1935 until I finished sixth grade.
Mm-hmm. So that's 6 years.
Uh-huh.
Did your teachers make home visits?
No. Not only did they make home visits, you made home visits too. We played a lot. In the neighborhoods, and so we were with our teachers a lot. Most of us.
Mm-hmm. Play with their children.
If they had children, we played. But 9 times out of 10, there was a friend living next door to a teacher at that particular time. So we were in and out. And then as we got older, then we could run errands or clean windows or sweep floors or dust. You know, we did these things in their homes, and, you know, paid a nickel or whatever. Sometimes these were our summer jobs.
Really?
Yeah.
Did that?
Yeah, I did a lot of that. I did a lot of that for Mrs. Pope. I did a lot of it for Mrs. Quinney. That was the principal. And I did for Miss Gertie Thomas, you know.
It used to be that if you have a child, your neighbor didn't have one, you would always send your child to see if there's anything that you can do for that person, like going to the store or sweeping off the porch for them. But see, you don't get that now.
So if you had a neighbor who didn't have children, you would send your
child
over.
That's right.
To help them.
That's
and then
right.
That neighbor would maybe give you a little treat or pennies or
whatever.
Whatever, candy, peas,
or
whatever.
Or we're never allowed to ask for anything, though.
No,
if
you didn't
you
ask
given
for
anything. Anything. You did not ask for anything. You did this, and you were glad to do it. Those are your words.
Because that's the way I was raised, in the neighborhood where we were raised.
You remember doing that as
doing
a child?
As a child, going to, that's right. We'd do that. And don't say you're not going to do it. I don't want to do it. If you're told to go next door to Miss Washington or go next door to Miss Ingram, whoever was living next door to you, or across the street, maybe a block away from home. If your parents know that person and know they don't have a child to go to the store for them or do little jobs for, little chores for them, you send your child around that to them.
Now, and I've talked with some other women who've done similar mm-hmm. things, but I haven't heard any of the men mention them. Were the boys sent to do little jobs?
Well, the boys always have little jobs to do, like carrying groceries and working to the shoe shops, like shoemaking place, where people take the shoes to be repaired. And then the children would go, the boys would be doing those kind of things. Well, it wasn't so much a grass cutting at the time, but they would go and rake in the front of people's doors for them. Mm-hmm.
So both the boys,
yeah, and the girls. Everybody that I remember in growing up in this neighborhood, all children were helpful to everybody in the neighborhood, really. Also, as I grew up, there were more girls. There were more girls in the in this particular neighborhood than there were boys. But you know, when the boys got to be able to work, and they could get these little jobs, during that time there were delivery boys, and if the boy was able to ride a bike, he delivered the fish from the fish market or the groceries from the grocery store or any other little business that was around, then he got that job to get help his family with their with the money. Yeah.
And the girls yeah. would go do more little housekeeping things.
That's right.
Could you describe one of your summer jobs doing this? About how old you were and
Well, I worked for Dr. and Mrs. Bryant one in the summers, and my job was to go down and wash the dishes and dust the whatnots, and to answer the telephone and sweep the front porch.
And how old were you when you were doing that?
I guess about somewhere between 11 and 12 And in fact, I got my first pair of nylon stockings from them when I began to wear stockings. They really had taken me as their own little girl, and I learned a lot of things because sometimes when they would be entertaining, I'd go down. I'd have to dress up, and I'd go down there help serve, help clean, you know.
And they lived in the neighborhood.
They lived right in the neighborhood. We weren't sent out of the neighborhood to do it.
You knew everyone. I used to work for Dr. Bryant during the summer months.
I used to work for Dr. Bryant in his office during the summer months when the regular receptionist was off, and I would go and work in the summer, so that's how she got acquainted with the Bryants, and they would take her. And while I'm there in the office working on West Broad, what used to be West Broad, Miss Bryant would be keeping her from me, and she'd be there helping her.
Uh-huh. So you didn't have to worry about child.
No, I didn't.
I think you might consider neighbors as being built-in babysitters, really. Because you didn't have to worry about if parents had to go out to work, they didn't have to worry about where their children were because they were left with neighbors.
Mm-hmm. You just watch them along with their other kids.
Right.
Now, I know you mentioned that you became the teacher eventually.
Right.
Did you think some of these childhood experiences?
I know they did. I know they did. Not only were my neighbors teachers, but one of my mom's sisters was a teacher. And she didn't teach in the Chatham County system,
but she taught in Sardis, Georgia, and I wanted to be like her. And then our next door neighbor was a teacher, and she saw to it that we studied and did our homework and everything. In fact, she was one of those persons who were instrumental in preparing me for school rather than, you know, kindergarten. In fact, I don't even remember kindergarten, so per se. We were taught, we didn't have a lot of free time to just run the street. Certain parts of our day was done with constructive things. We were taught, you know, reading and writing. We had to, they found out real early whether we had any music ability, because if anybody in the neighborhood, like Miss Thomas, had a piano, and I had to go in there and try to learn the piano too, just like her niece, who she raised.
This was another neighbor.
Right, her next to. No, she was a first grade school teacher.
Okay.
But she was one of the, you must remember that some people were more fortunate than others. They had a little bit more things, but everything they had was shared with others right there in the neighborhood. So, Miss Thomas had a piano in her house. And so, those of us who felt that they wanted to learn how to play or learn notes went to in her house to play with her daughter, and we just learned there, and she stopped and she taught at a certain time. If it was nap time for her niece, it was nap time for me if I happened to be in that house at that time, and we just had time out, and then we'd go back to something else.
So again, any child who was interested and showed the talent, she would work with them.
That's right.
And maybe you might go do a little favor for her sometime.
Maybe. Mm-hmm.
And now the teacher you mentioned who helped prepare you for school, was this was a different one than Miss Thomas?
No.
The neighbor?
Mrs. Thomas was my neighbor. And she taught at East Broad Street School, which was over on the east side of town, not at Florence. My Aunt Anna taught in Sardis, Georgia, is where she taught. And that's where I got my first exposure, you know, to really wanting to teach. In fact, my grandmother kept a lot of things that belonged to my Aunt Anna when my Aunt Anna died. And I can remember that part of my teaching plans when I was doing my student teaching came out of a trunk of things that my grandmama had saved that belonged to my Aunt Anna that I used to develop my unit in student teaching. And some of my fifth grade work, my classwork, was also in that trunk that I was able to put with that work. And then I did my student teaching in the school of one of our neighbors who was principal of that school.
Now, going back to Florence Street school days, do you have any special memories of being a student at Florence Street?
Yes. When they first began to have Little Miss Florence Street School during the May Festival days, I happened to be in Miss Ella Mae Lovett's class in fifth grade, and I was the first Miss Florence. And I also remember that I served as the bank. We started a savings bank. And this was during wartime, and we were buying saving stamps, and we also learned the banking system. And we set up a bank in the on the first floor of the school building, and every Monday and Friday we could buy saving stamps, save pennies, and then we carried it to the big bank and deposited it. And then at the end of the year, the children were able to draw their money out if they had saved their little pennies. They were able to draw their money out and redeposit it when school opened up again. I remember that. We had some very good teachers. We did a lot of activities, a lot of public speaking, and those children who could sing did a lot of singing, and we just had a lot of fun over.
What was this May Festival about? I heard
well,
else.
I don't know whether you have are familiar with. They have a big May thing.
First day of May,
and all of the schools used to celebrate individually, and we would do. The children would learn dances and things from the various countries or cultures that they happened to be studying. The costumes would be. We would plait the maypoles. There would be maybe 5 or 6, depending on how many grade levels there were in a school. There would be that many maypoles out on the school grounds, and the children did all these dances and plaiting of the maypole and recitations. Some did gymnastics, whatever the program called for, and they crowned the king and queen of the May Day. Nowadays, they still have these types of things, but they have it downtown across the street from, in the square, across from the Massey Heritage Center. They do this once a year, but the various schools come downtown and they and put, one festival.
They use paper.
Paper dresses, would you believe dresses being made out of paper?
Yeah.
Like crepe paper.
Crepe paper.
And did you, parents, have to help make the costumes?
Have to make the dresses.
Mm-hmm. Now, I interviewed a former teacher yesterday, McCart. She was there a little later, though, from the 49 and mid-50s, and it's Frances Gresham. She was telling me how strong the parent-teacher association was. Was that true?
It was true.
Your daughter was involved.
Well, our parents were always involved. If my mom wasn't there, my grandma was.
And what kinds of activities did you do as a member of the parent-teacher association?
Well, at that time, I was working, and I didn't take on no special activities, but if I was called to do anything, I would just go on and do whatever I can at that time, at that particular time. But I used to make the paper dresses for her and see that she was ready for whatever activity she was put in to do. But as far as just taking on a special part in the Parent Teachers Association, I didn't do it. I would go to the meetings whenever I was able to.
But your grandmother also?
Yeah.
Yeah, my grandma would come down, and she would, you know, she would do what she was asked to do also. Most times, parents were asked to chaperone various activities, and they helped raise the money for the different things that we, you know, needed to do, because a lot of times all children's parents weren't able to buy that crepe paper or whatever, and so the Parent Teachers Association bought them. You know, they raised the money and had the money available for the teachers to use. Yeah, for the teachers to use for their children.
You can get a
sheet of, well, a roll, I say a roll of crepe paper for 25 cents a roll.
Mm-hmm. You could make a lot of costs. And you had to hope it didn't rain that day.
That's right.
Yeah. So they used to postpone it. If it rained that first day, you could have it next week, whenever it was
clear.
What weather was clear.
Mm-hmm. Moving to a different subject, how about shopping in the area? Where did you get most of your food and other things?
The groceries. Well, it was a grocery store right on the corner of 40th and Florence, right there. There's a church there now. There's a grocery store there. That was Thomas Hayward's grocery store. And then it was a grocery store across the corner, which is a vacant lot there. Their grocery didn't stay too long. Then one to 41st Street in Florence.
A&P.
And then A&P used to be to 37th and Florence Street.
Mm-hmm.
And Warsaw's was 37th on one corner and A&P on one corner.
And did different...
And we used to walk...
From out here to Broughton Street.
To the bargain corner.
And Bay Street Market.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. You would walk to the market.
Yeah. And ride the bus back. Mm-hmm. Because we'd have the groceries.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But as far as everyday grocery food stuff.
Well, we had no corner stores.
The
corner stores. Mm-hmm.
And someone had mentioned there was a fish market.
A fish market.
Mr. Elbert's fish market at 37th and Florence.
Yeah.
So there were a lot of shops just within the
neighborhood.
This was during the 30s.
I believe in most neighborhoods you had corner grocery stores. They were either owned by,
as we said, a lot of neighborhoods were integrated, even though you had your section and the blacks were in their little section and whites were in their section. But there were black grocery neighborhood stores and there were white ones, and I think they all were patronized about equally. Yeah, by both equally. At least they were in Brownsville. We had, as Mama said, we had the Warsaw Market down there, and Mr. Elbert's Fish Market was there on that corner, and the A&P. So it depended on what you wanted. If you wanted 8 o'clock coffee, you went to the A&P for that.
What, they served coffee?
No, that was a ground coffee that was the most popular and best coffee.
That's
a name brand.
Yeah,
and if you wanted that, that's you went to the A&P. Uh-huh. And then you of course you went to Mr. Elbert's Fish Market for all your fresh fish. And sometimes Mr. Warsaw, Benny Warsaw, had the best, I guess, meat counter at that time, fresh meat. So you went in there to buy your meats. But then the neighborhood stores where you had to pick up other little things, then you did that. No, I think we had a lot of business in this neighborhood.
Any other kinds of business? Any cafes or restaurants?
No, we didn't have any cafes or
restaurants.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember any.
Now, you were here during the 30s. That was, we talked about shopping. That was some hard times.
It was. It sure was. That's why everybody was helping everybody.
So if someone had...
If I had and you didn't, you would have part of what I had. I have part of what you had.
Sundays were a big day, and I think just about everybody had the same type of Sunday dinner, but I can remember Miss Janie Johnson.
Mm-hmm. This lady used to make ice cream in the churn, two, sometimes three churns of ice cream, and especially in the summer, and everybody would be out in there on their porches sitting after church, and Miss Janie Johnson called all of us by name, and we'd go over across to her house and go in her kitchen and have a big mixing bowl, and she would put enough ice cream for everybody in my family, and then I'd run back to my house. And we would share it out in little bowls or cups or whatever we had and sit on the front porch. And everybody in our neighborhood would be eating ice cream from Miss Janie Johnson. She made that fresh custard ice cream every weekend, every Sunday.
Especially in the summer. Mm-hmm. And what street were you living on?
We were living at Hardin and 38th.
So and did you associate a lot with the people on your block?
Yeah, in your block, you knew everybody in your block.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody in your block.
It's not like it is now. You knew everybody in your block. Mm-hmm. And then you knew everybody from out of your neighborhood, too. But you would be sure to take care of your block.
The block was a real unit.
Mm-hmm. Unit, uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Was that, when you say block, would that be like 38th Street between mm-hmm. two other streets?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
That's your block.
Mm-hmm.
And we lived on Hardin between 38th and 39th. Mrs.
Johnson that I was talking about lived on 38th between Hardin and Florence. But her house was diagonally across from where we lived. And so there was this... that area, these four corners here, was just like home folk. We knew what was going on in everybody's house. You see, the children would get out at night and play a game. What was that thing we used to play? Kitty in the corner, you know, with the four telephone light post, you know, there on the corner. And the parents are sitting on the porch, and they watching us play at night, right out there until bedtime.
Mm-hmm. And they're talking with each
mm-hmm.
other.
That's right.
Yeah, talking about recreation, the way people had fun, the children were playing games together. Did the adults get together for any kind of social activities?
Picnics.
And some of them
had little social clubs that they would meet from house to house.
Could you describe what those were like, the social clubs?
The little social clubs, if it was a sewing circle, everybody would bring some embroidery or crochet or sewing, anything that they didn't have to, you know, use a machine or anything like that, that they were going to do it on their hand. Mm-hmm. They would meet maybe about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and sit and eat, have little refreshments, and sew and talk.
And these were people from the block?
Right in the neighborhood.
Other women, women did this
yeah,
together?
Uh-huh.
What were some of the other social clubs other than the sewing?
Well, that was the biggest thing.
The church.
You have church meetings.
Right.
And they would meet from house to house for church meetings, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Saturday night fish fries.
Oh, tell me about the Saturday night fish fries.
The Saturday night fish fries. Well, you buy a fish sandwich for 10 cents at that time. Like if my church was having a rally and I wanted to raise some money, well, a group from the church would get together and donate fish and salad. And we sell tickets maybe for 25 cents. And you come in and buy a fish sandwich.
And you do that at the church or at the neighborhood?
Sometimes at the church and sometimes not at the church. We used to have fish fries on the sidewalk outside the church.
Is that St. Mary's?
St. Philip.
Oh,
St. Philip on Martin Luther.
Drive.
Uh-huh. But if a unit in the church was going to have a fish fry, they'd probably go to somebody's house and do it. Uh-huh.
So a lot of different people from different churches were having these things.
Sure.
So you could probably go to one on
any Saturday.
Was fish fry one of the most common fundraisers?
That's the most common one and the easiest one. Because most everybody loves fish. And they get their fish on Saturdays. Don't worry about cooking. Go. So-and-so is having a fish fry. We'll go there and get us a fish.
And I guess someone else had mentioned to me a lot of men in the neighborhood would get together and play checkers on different street corners.
Corners,
and places like that.
That was a men's pastime, checkers game.
That was popular.
That was popular with them.
Men to get together, women sewing.
And cooking, exchanging recipes.
And talking about that children. The men played checkers when they had time. But most of the men were hardworking.
And they when they got together, it was pure relaxation. Mm-hmm. You know, and they didn't have time to be out that very much. But we can remember them. They have a checker club now down at the corner of 39th and Burris Street now, which is a modern type thing, but the men used to be right out on the corners or in front of somebody's house, you know.
Start about 9 o'clock at night.
Started about 9 o'clock at night when it's cool. And stay up until after 12. As long as they feel like playing, they just stay there and play checkers.
Was it one particular age group of men, or
anybody?
Almost ages would go.
They just won't let those little boys come in on them because they'd be talking, you know, and they won't let the little boys come in. And when they're out there playing, now when they want to play checkers with the boys, they get the little boys together. And when all the men, grown-up men, get together, they put the boys out, let them go on about their business. It's time for you to go home now.
But they would teach.
They would teach them how to do. Mm-hmm.
And what else? How about if do you all mind going on for a few more minutes? It's getting kind of late, 12:20. We could stop for today.
I'll give you about 10 minutes.
Okay. I'll ask about, in fact, maybe I'll turn this thing over. I was wanting to ask about health care in the community when you were coming up. I know the Charity Hospital was located here, and I'm curious as to how that hospital was part of the community, how people used that facility, didn't use it, used home remedies.
Well, during the time Charity Hospital was there, you had to be real sick to go to the hospital. Everybody would be using home remedies most of the time, but Charity Hospital was a lifesaver for a lot of folks out here in this neighborhood.
Number one, it was one of the only places I can remember that we could go.
And our doctors could practice. And emergencies naturally went, but when we were coming up, practically everything was home remedy, you know. It seemed that mamas just knew what to do for anything short of a broken bone, you know. And I think they could set those too when, you know, when we were coming up. We didn't do, I don't remember. And then we had health nurses. We had public health nurses that came around that kept check on parents and their children. And then you had the day clinics at the various schools, and at a certain the time, the nurses would be at the school, so you go up to the school to get a checkup and things like that. I can remember those types of things. But most, I don't even remember people being too very sick. I really don't. I don't remember too much about
having babies that rush out go to charity hospital. But other than that, charity hospital was a nice place, I'm telling you. They were very patient around there. The nurses and the doctors, you can go into charity hospital anytime and you can be served. And I don't think they refused to treat anybody because they didn't have the money to pay. I think they just took care of everybody around, as far as I can remember. I never heard of anybody being turned down from the hospital.
Did you ever use the hospital for anything?
I didn't. I had to, not for myself, but I had to take her there. And what was the first thing that...
I was in the hospital twice.
So
you were a patient in the hospital. What you remember about being a patient there.
Well, being a patient in charity hospital was quite an experience for me. First place I was in there, and the first time I was in the private room, and there wasn't anybody in there. But again, that was another experience. I wasn't afraid because nurses lived in our neighborhood too, and I knew Nurse Williams and her sister Rosalie. You know, I knew all of them, and their Rosalie's niece that they raised had to spend all of her time in the hospital, so the charity was like home. When she came home from school, she had to go to the hospital. So sometimes I'd go to the hospital to play with her on the porch of the hospital because both of them worked there and they were on duty. So this is where she played. So I was never really afraid. And then there was always a doctor on duty, and also Dr. Smith's wife, Mrs. Smith, was the x-ray technician there at the hospital, and she lived right there on the corner from us. So, you know, it was, and like Mom said, they never turned anybody away. Everybody went to this hospital or either to Georgia Infirmary over on Abercorn, because those were the two hospitals where blacks could go. Everything, and I would say in the Negro community, was like family, because that was all we knew. Like I always tell somebody, I guess my family was probably maybe had less than most families in this area, maybe. But I didn't know that I was poor. I really didn't. I didn't even know that I lived in the ghetto until desegregation, because we were brought up differently. We were very proud people. We were taught that education was very important. If you wanted to better your condition, then you did these things, and that's what we did. Not that we didn't know that there were black folks and white folks. We knew that, but as being dependent, yes, as far as jobs were concerned, and lots of our parents worked in the homes of whites, but that didn't mean that we were less loved. We were brought up to understand that this is what had to be done. And then some of us whose parents worked in outside the home, in the homes of whites,
were taught that our parents love us, but they had to do this. And then some of those people were very good to us too. And I know to me, to help see that I had some of the opportunities that some of my other friends would not have, and I could share it with them. You know, I guess I was one of the best dressed.
Now, this doctor you mentioned, who you work for, you have worked.
He's black.
That was a black doctor.
Yes, right? Dr. Milton Brain. Yeah, yeah, he was black.
So
and
you had black professional people all around.
Yeah, all around.
Neighbors.
Uh huh. The community was, I would say, well mixed. You know, a mixture of people. Everybody helping everybody else. Those who were more fortunate were helping those of us who were less fortunate. And the self-esteem was there. No matter if you were a laundress, you felt no less than the doctor's wife. You see, because they didn't make each other feel that way. It's just different now.
Mm-hmm. What kinds of work did you do, Mrs. Stokes? You mentioned you helped at the doctor's office.
I worked in the white family's homes. I had one of the family's homes that I worked in was old people from my mother's time. And I did little work there. And then I worked in the doctor's office as a receptionist, and I worked in the insurance office during the summer vacations, and then I went out to the school.
You worked full time for Dr. Sykes.
Oh yeah, Dr. Sykes. I worked for him. I forgot about him. I worked full time about for him as a receptionist there, and then after I left Dr. Sykes' office, I went out to the school, and I started out there in the lunchroom as a substitute, and I ended up retiring as a cashier at Saul Johnson School. And that's the last paying job that I had, all the rest of them.
And you worked a lot
without paying. Yeah, I worked a lot without paying. And right now I'm working with the senior citizens as a senior companion telephone operator. So that's what I'm doing now.
And Mr. Stokes, was your dad here?
No, he worked at the Savannah Morning News up until the time he died. He was there 34 years.
What did he do for
that? He was in the mail room. Mm-hmm. He started there when he was a boy, mm-hmm. and he worked right on through up until he died.
And my grandmama was the matriarch of the family.
Did your grandma live in
the
house?
We lived with my grandma.
This was her house.
Mm-hmm. She was the boss of the family.
So when you married Mrs. Stokes, your husband came to your house?
And came to my house.
And you remained a unit together like that?
Mm-hmm. And her younger brothers and sisters left. She was the one that stayed.
Mm-hmm. So the youngest child.
She was the oldest child.
Oh, okay.
She was the older of them. So she helped educate and get all of them prepared to go out. And so everybody else moved away, but she was always the one that was home. I don't regret a bit of it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I think I got the best of all of it.
Mm-hmm. You all have been fantastic. I know you're short on time. Is there anything else you'd like to mention about this neighborhood, this community? That
we had our community meeting Tuesday night on Harden Street. And the reports that came in, I think everything is pretty on the up and up out here now. The neighborhood is much improved. One time it had gone down real bad, and you can see by the buildings around here now that this one is boarded up. Those are boarded up. And the corner, they tore the houses down on the corner. And now they're tearing down over on 40th Street over there. They're tearing down the little houses over there now. But on the whole, I think the neighborhood is pretty good now. We're kind of coming back.
Most of the older people.
Gone is all new people. Right.
And either their family members have their houses other places. They're selling these or renting them and not really caring for them. So, as you see, my mom is the only person in this block except for the little brick house across. And the lady that owned that died, and they happened to be fortunate enough to rent that to a young couple. They are from out of town, but they are over there. But there are hardly any older residents around here now. The next block is falling apart because the people that own those houses have died out and their children are not caring for them. And right around the corner, I don't think only Catherine, who else is around there that have been there all... Taylor. Catherine's the oldest round there on Howard Street. See? And Janice. Yeah.
Catherine and Janice are the oldest
mm-hmm.
ones around
Howard
Street.
But Catherine's name is Catherine. Taylor Janice's name is something else.
They may be other people.
Well, Catherine, you could.
Catherine Taylor.
Would be able to tell you a lot more, especially about her, block right there. Janice is much younger. She's younger than I am, much younger than I am.
But her older parents have died.
Her parents have died, you know, so she wouldn't be able to tell you very much about, you know, the old neighborhood.
But Catherine and Russell
could tell you something about them.
Anna McDuffie on Florence Street could tell you about around that time.
It sounds like there are some new people who are participating in this association.
And yes.
Some of the younger people are.
Uh-huh. Well, this Hardin Street community, it's just, I think it's 15 of us that really active with the community. The rest of the folks, we couldn't get them interested in it, but it's 15 of us around. And I think I'm about the oldest person in age around. In and outside of Reverend Adams, but Reverend Adams are not.
Now, he could tell you some things.
Reverend J.Q.
Yes.
John Q. Adams.
Another woman I talked to, Miss Alberta Payne.
Uh-huh.
She's going to take me over there and introduce me to him.
Yeah.
She said he's kind of frail now.
Yes,
he's
frail,
but his mind.
He's got a better mind. He's got a better mind than I have. No, I don't.
She said he's about 98.
Because last year, the community gave him a scroll. Our community gave him a scroll. You know, made a scroll for us. Mm-hmm. And that was for his birthday, and that was 97. I think that was the 97th birthday.
Reverend Adams even taught me.
Really?
He taught me?
His sister was one who tried to make a piano start of me.
Them to go down. So now they got them all boarded up.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones across the street, the owner of that property over there died.
and left it to his grandson, and it just gone all gone. He's lost everything, just about all of it, all mm-hmm. that property.
So on this block today, do you know many of the people who
on this in this particular block? I only know the people across the street, and they just moved in there. But as far as on this block, I'm the only person in this block.
Mm-hmm. Because the other houses are gone.
And across the corner, it's Mary Dammer. She's over on the corner, right on the corner. Well, she's been there a long time. And on this corner is Alma Davis, but I don't even see her because she is a homemaker. Oh, she's not a homemaker. She is a companion. She goes out on jobs, and sometimes she'd be gone for a whole week,
okay.
living in homes with invalid people.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Did your daughter ever want you to move over near her? And
Yeah, she matted on a room to get me to move, and I wouldn't move.
You felt like you wanted to?
I'd rather stay.
In your own home?
Yeah. Do like I want to do, when I want to.
And you've lived in this house since?
43,
mm-hmm. you said. So that's getting on to be 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it would be hard to think about leaving your home.
I tried it, but it didn't work out for me.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like I was intruding all the time. So, and I would get in one place and just stay there, and it was very uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I said, let me stay here and come by and check me out.
Right, because they probably worry about you being alone on the block.
Uh-huh.
And things,
but I think I'd be well taken care of.
Because you have a number of people right nearby who you can call anytime.
Well, the Taylors, we talk regularly together. And Anna, when I call down there, she'll call me if she doesn't see me. In a few days, she'll call to find out how everything. And if I'm going out of town, I call her and let her know that I'm going. And if she's going, she called me and let me know that she's gone. But she has three boys around there with her. Three of her children are there with her.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes it convenient for her. But she would check on me, and her son, one of them, when he have a chance, he'll come around and cut the grass for me.
Mm-hmm.
And the young man across the street, when he's working in the daytime now, his shift is in the day, so he leaves home around 6:30 in the morning, and he'll get back about 4 o'clock this afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And he checks on me. And then my church members, they come pick me up to go to choir or rehearsal, go to church meetings.
And which church are you a member of?
St. Philip.
On Martin Luther King.
I was christened in St. Philip when, in 1910, I was christened.
Mm-hmm. And so you have been a member there from that time.
Not my time.
That's. And now the churches, they would draw members from a wider area than just one neighborhood.
Yes, they do.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we have members in our church from as far as Thunderbolt, Wilmington Island,
mm-hmm.
Skidaway. And then we have some out of town members that comes and ever so often to church.
Was your church ever involved with this area of town in particular, doing any kind of activities here, or?
just the members that's a member of the church.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Doing their fish fries.
Yeah. And have meetings. But now we kind of slack up with that now since everything got so crucial. We try to have our meetings down to the church on Sunday, or when we're going to have church service, we try to have a meeting either before or after church service when everybody's right there. Then everybody have a way of getting home without any problems.
Can you think of any other folks in the Brownsville, or I guess what used to be Currytown area, who you think would be willing and interested in, you know, doing a talk like we did today, remembering the past history?
Other than Reverend Adams, that's the only one that I know of, because the rest of the folks around there, they just moved, the ones that I know, they just moved. And I'm not too keen on singing in that neighborhood.
Okay.
I know, hard street. Now, like Alberta Payne says, she'll take you to Reverend Adams.
Yeah, she'll introduce you to him.
So that's about the safest way. Because the other two people that I know around there, they're working.
Right.
They work all day long. They're not home until late in the evening. And that would be Bernice Singleton and Thelma Green. But other than that, I wouldn't tell you to go around.
No, I don't go.
Wait on Alberta to take you.
Yeah, I don't just go out. I wait till I get a reference to someone, and like I did with you through Mr. Mathis and your son-in-law, and then call you and then know the address and go to the house. And I also went over to the Golden Age Center at the church, at the Catholic Church,
and
met several people there, senior citizens there, who I talked to at the center, and that was really
nice. Well, you got a variety of people over there, then. From a larger area, because I think everybody from Anderson Street back to 36th Street.
Yeah, I spoke to one woman from Lavinia Street and one from Klein Street, and so that area got included. But you mentioned your brother still lives in town.
Yeah, so, but I think the doctor would declare him legally blind. He can see just what's right in the front, right up like this, in the front of him. And he suffers with arthritis. He can't hardly get about.
Does he have someone there helping him?
His son and daughter-in-law lives upstairs. And she looks after him. Because since I can't take that long walk down there myself, he told me to just stay home and call him every day, and if they need me, they'll get me down. So I don't bother about going out. I used to go down there every day and check on them. When I got to the place, I couldn't take that long walk. I had cramps in my legs.
Well, that was, you said 32nd?
That's the 35th. He's right in the front of Klein Street on Beach Road.
Oh, that's a long walk.
That's a long walk.
Because that's way over, too.
But I used to take those walks down there until I started having cramps in my legs so bad. So I stopped. I didn't want to stop, but he told me to stop. Trying to make it down there. Because I may get cramp in my leg in the middle of the street and can't get out or something. So it would be better for me to stay in, but we just talk on the telephone. Now when I go down to the church, I work down there with the soup kitchen in the wintertime. When I'll be coming back, when they'll be bringing me back home, then I'll stop by and check on him. But everywhere I go now, I have to ride.
which is very inconvenient for me. A lot of times I want to go and I don't have a way of going. It makes me very irritated.
Because the buses and so forth are not good, are they?
No, they're so far.
And you have to walk so far to get one. Now, when you in the 1930s, 40s, 50s, when there were shops all around, you walked most of these places.
By that time, I walked around here to Broughton Street and all around Broughton Street and back home.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't worry me. But I think it might be coming down on me now because I used to be out there to Saul Johnson on that cement for 7 hours. And I used to walk from here to Ogeechee Road and 39th Street to catch the bus, ride the bus to Victory Drive over there in the front of where the Pig and Wiggly is.
Yeah.
And then walk from there to Johnson School.
Oh, my.
Then stand up for 7 hours.
Because you were the cashier, did you say?
Yeah.
On the cement floor?
On the cement floor. And before I started the cashiering, when I was just something, I would be standing there making sandwiches for maybe 2 hours,
mm-hmm.
making up sandwiches.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had to help with the other people.
And then you'd come home and cook for your family
cook
and take care of them.
Yeah.
That must have been a very long work day. What time did you have to leave home?
I would leave home at 6 o'clock in the morning to be out there with Saul Johnson in the kitchen at 7. And then we supposed to get off at 2:30. And sometimes it'd be 4 o'clock before we leave from out there.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time I get home, it's almost 6 o'clock. But it's been a while.
Mm-hmm.
I come on and do what I had to do, take my bath, get on out here and go on down to St. Oak Church.
Walk
on down.
Oh, my. You must have been a person of tremendous energy.
It didn't worry me as long as I was moving. It didn't worry me at all. Good. But just in the past year and a half, my legs started to burn, and I'm just not able to take the long walks.
Think of those thousands of miles you
mm-hmm.
must have walked in your lifetime. Incredible.
We'd rather walk than ride.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't want to